Welcome back, everybody. Today is Friday of the third week of Lent.
Hey, it's good to see you. Thanks for being here. We continue with this meditation a little bit with talking about, again, time and looking at the end of life.
Oh, how many, whilst they are busy weaving, that is, preparing and executing the worldly projects they have devised with so much care, are surprised and cut off by death. Oh God, of what use are riches, possessions, or kingdoms in death when nothing is needed but a coffin and a simple garment to cover the body? My life is cut off as by a weaver. Whilst I was yet beginning, he cut me off.
Pretty sobering look at life. In the end, all that we need is a coffin and a garment to cover us.
Yeah, but that's true. That's all we need.
But how often we fool ourselves into thinking, so how many more things we actually need than that, other than that? He talks about the busy projects that we have, executing the things that are important to us, the worldly projects. A to-do list. You like to have...
Oh, I love my to-do lists. I love checking it off. Sometimes I write things that I've already done just so that I can check it off.
Not only do you love to make yourself to-do lists, you also like to make to-do lists for...
For you.
That's how much you love lists.
Well, it's partially because you forget to do things that I've asked you to do.
I would say that's partially correct.
But I think it's very correct. You don't mind, you're not offended.
Not at all. But what I have realized is that that to-do list has a magical way of having things pop to the top. You check off one thing and all of a sudden, oh, there's something else at the top. How did that get there? And it just magically happens, right? Yeah,
there's a never-ending list of things to do around here, you know?
Which I have really come to realize something, friends. When I get to the end of my life, I'm still going to have a to-do list. And that's true for all of us. We're never going to get to the end of our life and think, oh, I've done it all. There's nothing left for me to do. I've checked everything off the to-do list. Which leads me to an important realization. Not that the list is not important. It's a good way to manage time. But the great value in life doesn't come from what we do. It comes from who we become. That's the great value of life. Now, we do these things because we want to love God. And so it's an expression of love, doing our duty, that shapes who we are. But the point of life isn't filling off and checking off the to-do list. What we should make is a to-be list. Who's the kind of person that I want to become? Because that's what matters. That is the real thing. In the end, all that remains is love. So we need to become a person of love. And are the projects that we busy ourselves doing serving that end, serving to glorify God? Because if they're not, we need to make some adjustments. Or maybe that adjustment is simply the adjustment of the heart, the attitude by which we live.
The great secret of death, which makes us see that which the lovers of this world do not see. The most enviable fortunes, the most exalted dignities, the proudest triumphs, lose all their splendor when they are viewed from the bed of death. This reminds me of something that I often tell our children. You know, if they go to confession, I'll say, you know what, you'll be so happy on your deathbed that you went to confession today. Or if they're kind of being, you know, finicky about something, I'll say, is this really going to matter when you're on your deathbed? It just kind of puts things into perspective, really. And sometimes I will make decisions thinking, will this be important to me when I die? And it actually really helps me.
Yeah. So the good questions to ask ourselves is, what are we chasing in life? What do we value in life? Where does our time go in life? And in the end, will that matter?
At present, our passions make the things of this earth appear different from what they really are. Death tears away the veil and shows them in their true light to be nothing but smoke, dirt, vanity, and misery. O God, of what use are riches, possessions, or kingdoms in death when nothing is needed but a coffin and a simple garment to cover the body?
So we've heard a little bit of this already, but what stood out to me was how the passions deceive us. You know, our passions, our inclinations are moving downward instead of upward. They're disordered. And so there's a tendency to cling to this world. And then when we look at our passions, what we feel strongly about often deceives us from the truth. Because what we feel sometimes is important isn't necessarily important. Like that brand new car, or that brand new house, or that raise, or the career advancement, or what school, you know, our children might go to, which what opportunities we might miss out on. In the light of eternity, some of these things are not very significant, but how we respond to them is the most significant thing. And so we have to check the passions, because just simply because I feel this is important doesn't make it so. And our feelings are a terrible indicator of what is important. As St. Alphonsus is telling us, death has this way of stripping away that veil, and we see life as it is. I think death is the great equalizer, isn't it? We come into the world naked, a little baby, right? No titles, no possessions, no money, no fame, no power. And death leaves us the same way. It strips us of the titles, possessions, money, power, everything that we've accumulated in life. The only thing that remains is love. Have we become a person of love? Do we have the love of Jesus Christ within our soul through grace, sanctifying grace? That is all that remains. And if that is all that remains, that is all we should be focused on while we're living out our life, doing our duties, fulfilling our responsibilities.
So my question is, why would God give us feelings if we can't, you know, rely on them?
Feelings are a beautiful thing, a beautiful human experience, but they aren't what they ought to be because of concupiscence. Mm. So the feelings should be subject to reason. Mm-hmm. But often what we do is we put feelings above and reason below. So right. I feel this way, therefore I will think this way.
Right.
And so our feelings in God's order of things should have been dominated by reason. I also don't want to completely discount the feelings in the spiritual life. St. Ignatius goes a lot more into this in depth of his rules for spiritual discernment. Maybe we'll do videos on that. But they can be indicators, but we can't rely on them completely and totally.
Mm-hmm. Let us then be persuaded that the proper time for repairing a disordered conscience is not the hour of death, but during life. Let us hasten to do now that which we cannot do then. All passes quickly and ends. The time is short. Therefore, let us so act that everything may serve towards attaining eternal life. So more recently, I feel like, you know, I feel like most of our children have been really good sleepers. Like they've slept pretty good through the night. I mean, there have been blips here and there. But our Pascal is just, you know, I don't know what it is. It's like I've forgotten how to take care of a baby and I don't know how to get them to sleep well. And in the last few weeks, it's been particularly challenging. For example, last night, I think he was up from 3 until 4:30 in the morning. And, but you know what? I feel like in some ways, these wake-ups have been little gifts to me from God. It's like he's giving me extra minutes to offer little prayers for him in the night. And though I don't foresee this always being this way, but I feel like when God wakes us up in the night, for whatever reason, we shouldn't let that moment pass us and be like, oh, so annoyed that so-and-so woke me up or whatever. But be like, okay, Lord, I'm going to say a little Hail Mary, or for the sake of his sorrowful passion, have mercy on us. There's just so many opportunities in the night, even when we don't want to be awake, that we can still offer up some sacrifices.
In the meantime, you can throw in one for your husband too, who doesn't so graciously embrace that cross in the middle of the night.
You know, by 4:30 this morning, I was kind of feeling a little bit frustrated, to be honest.
Anything else? Are we done?
There was actually one more thing, but it's maybe getting long, but it's just so beautiful. I have to say it. Okay, so at the end of this meditation, St. Alphonsus talks about the Passion of Christ, and he speaks about how Jesus was so covered in blood, so unrecognizable, that they put on his previous garments. You know, he had the robe on, they were mocking him, and then they put on his other garments so that people would at least be able to recognize him. And then it goes on to say, "But Jesus did not wait," says St. Thomas of Villanova, "for the executioner to lay the cross upon him. Of his own accord, he stretched forth his hands and eagerly laid hold of it and placed it upon his own wounded shoulders. He waited not till the soldier should lay it upon him, but he laid hold of it joyfully. 'Come,' he then said, 'come, my beloved cross. It is now 33 years that I am sighing and searching for thee. I embrace thee. I clasp thee to my heart. For thou art the altar upon which it is my will to sacrifice my life out of love for my flock." I think I'm just going to end there.
Beautiful. Friends, thank you so much for watching. If you'd like to meditate upon the Passion of Christ and the Way of the Cross, St. Alphonsus Liguori's Way of the Cross is linked at the end of this video. It's beautiful. Please comment below, share with us what stood out to you and why, and we will see you on Monday.